Welcome to Getting Intimate with CX, brought to you by Brandhook and distributed through the CMO magazine.
When we're talking about here's all the ways we can solve your problem, you've actually got more depth in terms of the relevancy of what you're doing.
Yes.
So the conversation we have with the customer is more relevant.
And more meaningful.
And more meaningful, yeah.
Hi, I'm Pip Stocks, and I'm your host for Getting Intimate with CX, an 11-part series about what makes a great customer experience and how brands in Australia are getting intimate to do that. Well, thank you very much, Tammy Marshall, who's my guest for this particular episode. Tammy's an expert in the tourism transformation category and has had quite a few senior roles in the industry, particularly with TFE Hotels and Carnival Australia. But now Tammy runs a company called The Beehive. Thanks, Tammy. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure.
I'm very excited to be talking about customer experience. But The Beehive is actually something we started in December last year. And it's a consultancy business that actually specialises in innovation and actually around the customer experience, but it's all about the transformation as we see our industry start to shift in terms of the type of experiences that our customers are looking for, and also as we hit to the 4.0 revolution that really requires a paradigm shift in how we approach business.
You'll have a lot to say about Airbnb, I'm sure.
Yes, exciting sector, the whole sharing economy.
So Tammy, you know I'm asking everyone the same 7 questions. We're already getting some great insights and similarities across category, across kind of marketing directors to CEOs to consultants. So it's an interesting process to go through to get such a diverse group of people, but you know, really kind of similar themes coming out. So as you know, we'll be summarising those for everybody. So let's start. Question 1. When was the last time you had a great customer experience and which brand was it with?
Okay. It's actually quite a hard question.
Because there are shit customer experiences in Australia?
Well, I also think because we expect so much today. And I think now with the complexity of so many touch points with the digital integration, we kind of really judge brands on how they deliver. So, but the ones that really stand out though, so, you know, those high impact brands have obviously been really embedded in the memory. So for me, I would say if I talk to the tourism and travel sector, I stayed in Zarafa Camp in Botswana in 2015.
Wow.
On the Okavango Delta, which was, you know, one of my most memorable holidays ever. And the reason why it was an amazing customer experience was not just because of all the design behind the place and the people, but what the guide was able to do was to really stage an experience for us, and the way he did that was he actually asked questions when he first met us. So he wanted to understand if we'd been on safari before, so he actually was able to understand a couple of us had been on safari and then the others had never been on safari, and so of course they wanted to see the Big Five, etc. But he was able to ascertain what we hadn't seen, and so we found it in the middle of the trip. We found ourselves between the wild dogs, which we were chasing, and we were being stampeded by a whole herd of elephants, and we were actually caught between the two.
Oh my
So the thing was, we'd never seen wild dogs, and we had this most amazing experience on sunset with the wild dogs trying to take on a baby elephant and with the matriarch elephants all starting to fight back. So, you know, to even be able to stage an experience in the bush was possible because he really understood what was going to exceed our expectations.
Oh my gosh, that sounds amazing.
And it was. And it still is.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
So the second question kind of loops into that. So the second question is, you know, what do you think makes a great customer experience? And what I'm hearing from you is that there was this kind of he pretty quickly started to build an understanding of what you wanted, and you know that relationship then kind of started from there. Would that be something you think makes a great customer experience?
Yeah, I think the first thing he did was really wanted to understand more about his customers and more about his travels. So I think that he was able to get to a deeper level through questioning, which is a really good technique to try and understand more. But I think if I was to think about what makes a great customer experience, I think it is definitely being consistent every day. Not, you know, where you hear a great experience for one customer and a different experience for another. You have to be good every day. I think the other part is really thinking about the experience from the customer's point of view. So really understanding the problem you're trying to solve for your customer and actually putting yourself in their shoes and then actually, you know, providing that experience. And if you can go beyond that experience and then do some surprise and delights, which in the tourism and hospitality space is a very rich environment for that. So if there are things that you can do, the unexpected, I think that really just adds the extra value.
Those things only work, I think surprise and delight is brilliant, but that only works if the rest of it is working, don't you think?
Exactly. Holistically, you have to really be centred around what the customer needs, be consistent, and I think there needs to be a culture of actually taking on the friction points, the pain points, you know, so that's that if there is friction, you're removing it. It's just that it's you're committed to that. So there's that drives that consistency. And so you're delivering something that a customer wants, it solves their problem. And at the same time, if there is friction, it's removed and you consistently deliver. And if you do all of that and then you add a surprise and delight, then you really are exceeding expectations.
Yeah. Why do you think some brands are good at doing this? You know, I mean, there's really consistent themes about, you know, consistency, care, being curious, asking questions, you know, understanding needs. I mean, why do you think some brands are really good at cracking that to develop a great customer experience and others are just terrible at it?
Well, I think it first starts from the top. So like innovation, I think also that whole customer experience and you know how companies feel and react to that is really led from the top. So, and I don't just mean in terms of here's a vision and our mission. I mean actually, you know, walking the talk. So actually talking about the customer conversations they've had, actually having policies that really do help empower people to, you know, make a difference on the front line and actually solve those pain points. So I think it's about having a leader at the top who really inspires a vision but also has a culture that empowers people to actually solve problems on the front line, because there's nothing worse than not having the autonomy to do that.
Yeah, that's right. And I think, I mean, there's lots of companies that claim... in Nordstrom, I think Rachel Kelly was telling me about how the people, the service staff now have to ask permission to say no, you know, versus asking permission to say yes. And I think that is amazing. What an amazing thing. So what they're encouraging people to do is actually say yes to a customer. Yes, I can do that. Yes, I can help you. Yes, that's, you know, not really something that we're used to, but yes, yes, yes. And so you actually have to ask permission to say no. I think it's really a fabulous policy.
Yeah, I think it really speaks to the commitment of the organisation.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it requires. And I think there's a whole host of things that can be done in terms of, you know, I notice with especially with a lot of the startup companies, they spend a lot of time with their customers. They spend a lot of time understanding the problems their teams have, and they, you know, a lot of them are spending 2 to 3 hours a week dedicated, you know, to actually spend time with the customer, or, you know, might be phone jacking and actually hearing what customers are saying. But I think that's really important because it says that they are really understanding at a much deeper level the problems they need to solve for those customers. I think there's been a whole flip in terms of marketing because, you know, we developed products to market to customers. The flip is now that we actually want to understand the problem that the customer has and what is the solution that we want to develop that's going to meet that need. So we don't actually need to market it as hard or try to, you know, put this positioning in somebody's head that we actually are solving their problem. So therefore, it's more credible and you can get more traction much faster. So to me, the whole flip in the way we were kind of the 60s and when marketing was really born in terms of the four P's and that's really in the last decade has really started to shift.
Yeah.
And I think that's what the startup world has done really well, is define the broader context of the problems they're solving. It's actually quite a shift.
I started my career in London many years ago. I don't want to say how old I am. But I was very fortunate to be working on a lot of Procter & Gamble business for the advertising agencies I worked for. And there was always, what is the customer need on this brief? And that was when Lafley was there the first time. So they were, 18, 20 years ago, they were the real bastions and leaders of understanding customer needs. And I think that is something that, people forget. And it's really now just come back into fashion.
Although I've done market segmentations, I've done brand segmentations, I've done a lot of work and always spend time trying to understand the needs, I think what Clayton Christensen has done, particularly around the jobs theory, I really love as well.
I love it too, yeah.
Is he's taken away, what we tried to do was correlate trends or psychographics and demographics and try and then group and clump people into a segment. And then we tried to marry that product, whereas I think Clayton Christensen's allows you to think more broadly and contextually about that problem you're trying to solve.
Mm.
And it actually changes the whole way you start to think.
And I think the same product can have a different job for different people as well. That's the other thing I love about it. Like, we use that thinking for one of our FMCG clients recently. And, it kind of opened up the opportunity to say, well, yes, this is the job you're doing for this particular kind of person, but over here there's another job that you may not have considered that you're actually delivering against as well. How do we actually reconcile the two with some kind of broad theme?
Yeah, so I think it sounds like a small shift, but it's actually quite an incredible shift in the way we think about think about our whole sales and marketing funnel. And a lot of the really successful sales and marketing funnels in today's world are actually using putting the problem out there and then providing solutions. But they're kind of got the big problem and then they've got all the granular problems that they're solving. So they're actually continuously telling the customer that we can solve this, this, and this, and this. So they're actually creating an incredible match in terms of providing a product that's going to solve their problems, as opposed to how we talked about product features.
Yes.
We talked about here's the features that you get. Well, some of those features are irrelevant.
Yeah.
But when we're talking about here's all the ways we can solve your problem, you've actually got more depth in terms of the relevancy of what you're doing.
Yeah.
And so the conversation we have with the customer is more relevant.
And more meaningful.
And more meaningful, yeah.
How are your clients measuring customer intimacy or the success of how they're going with customer intimacy? Have you had any of these conversations?
Customer intimacy is not a term that I've heard coined a lot, to be honest, in the business. So I think we've talked, obviously CRM was born in 20 years ago, I guess, but CRM was the conversation, the one-on-one, which was about how do you build that relationship. But I don't think that it necessarily was an intimate relationship.
Mm.
But I think technology allows us today to have the segment of one, the one-on-one conversation. I think technology really does enable that to happen. I think CRM was still trying to segment and clump us and group us within a CRM to try and talk to a segment of the market, whereas technology is all about how you personalise based on someone's preferences to have a conversation that's more relevant or serve up the right content that's more relevant. So I think we can have a more intimate relationship by understanding what our customers need and actually delivering through digital applications what they want. And then I also kind of think there's a deeper level, which I really love Simon Sinek's why circle.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about, I think we buy into brands and want to build a more intimate relationship when we buy in why they do what they do,
the brand
not
purpose.
What they do. And I think the Simon Sinek is also really relevant.
Because
if I think about some of the brands, just my gym that I go to, they have a beautiful philosophy, there's a whole community. They do a lot more things than just being a gym. And they've really created the intimacy within that. It's a whole community for all the members. And essentially they've got the app and the website and the digital application, so they've actually got many touch points also to communicate with. But I think we've bought into, why they do what they do.
We
love what they do.
All right, your last two questions. So what technology or trend are you most excited by at the moment when it comes to brand experience?
The Net Promoter Score is the kind of dual die, I think, particularly in the tourism and hospitality sector. It really does tell you in terms of how you're delivering. And I think it's a truer score than just looking at customer satisfaction. What NPS sometimes can't tell you is kind of just being actually in the field and actually looking at interacting with your customers. Actually, just an expression on someone's face can tell you a lot. So I think there's the NPS score, but then I think as executives or people in marketing and teams, they've really got to get out and interact with customers. It's having those conversations and some of those things that can't be translated.
I think NPS can be a bit controversial. I like the second part of what you said. I like the ability to go into the world and look at people's faces. Like when you can see how people feel when they're putting on an item of clothing that makes them feel amazing, or when they're preparing a meal for a child and seeing a child eat that meal, they're the kind of what we would call granular data, or that small data that allows you to really flesh out a new opportunity or an insight that you hadn't thought of. So I know big businesses are using a lot of NPS scores, but I think when it's attached to something else, as you said, I think it does, that kind of measurement combination can be quite powerful.
Yeah, I think it's an indicator.
Yeah.
I don't think it's something that, you can just rely on. So you obviously get a lot of opportunity for customer feedback and conversations. And I think those conversations can really inspire your teams
to
just keep doing what they're doing, because it is making a difference and people are loving the experiences that we're creating in the tourism space. And, they can be very special and make a real difference.
All right, your last question. If you had a magic wand, what would be one thing that you'd want to change about maybe the tourism customer experience?
Well, if I had a magic wand, I would probably want a way that could marry brands and customers that valued the same things, and that the preferences and the problems we were solving were basically easy to find them, they were accessible, because at the moment it's the hardest thing in a very cluttered market is how you find those customers and how they find you. So if you had a magic wand, if there was just an easy way to marry the two, that would be ideal.
Because I just think about the experience of booking, whether it's a holiday or a break or something, even if it's just a night away with your hubby or your partner or whatever, kind of you feel like doing at that time. I mean, there's so many options, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. But I think that's going to change. So I'm seeing a lot of new technology, working with a couple of technology providers at the moment. And so I'm probably, I see those solutions are coming. So I think there'll be...
So accumulating it all for me, or...?
Yes, so understanding your preferences,
yeah,
and then be able to deliver the relevant content.
That's what I want. I actually just want a personal assistant for everything I want to organise. Like, I just want to be able to ring someone or go online and say, because there's too much. Yeah. I get overwhelmed even by Airbnb and find it overwhelming.
So I don't think it's going to be long before you'll have the ability to have content that's curated and served to you based on what you love to do.
Yeah.
And an understanding of your preferences and what sort of holidays you like, and then saying you must be due for a holiday and starting to think about it. Here's what we think would work for you. That is very close. And I think the other one is that the Apple iPhone 8 will have augmented reality. So essentially, you know, virtual reality could help you choose a holiday, but augmented reality means when you go away, you could, you know, just use your phone to actually find out what that statue was. Or so, you know, you've kind of got this whole shift going on in terms of the tourism space that's going to be very sophisticated. And I think that planning stage and that selection of what's the best holiday for me, that is very close. So obviously Google's also launched some products around curating itineraries. So as they gather more data around you and what you love to do, that will only become more sophisticated. So big data will change all of that.
I don't know what they know about me. Isn't it interesting? Like, I mean, I'm a Google Docs. I've got a login and all the rest of it. I feel like I don't really know what people know about me. So then no one's talking to me.
Yeah, but Google already has quite a lot of data on what you research.
Yeah, totally.
There's also, they can also access some of your Facebook.
Yeah.
So look at the visuals that you...
I know you get all those. Most of those ads, I reckon, are just, you know, the witchery dress that I researched the week before keeps coming up on my feed.
Yeah.
So it's not proactive, it's so reactive.
But I think you're right. In the travel space, it will also need to be building a relationship, understanding more about what you like, not just taking the wide kind of mass market data, but also actually really building very personal data that you feel safe about disclosing, so that brand can come back and actually deliver solutions for you.
Because if you look at, I mean, we've booked a couple of holidays recently, and so between my husband and I think we've probably been to 20 or 30 different touch points researching, and probably this, you know, booked through 5 different places. So, you know, if one company had that one relationship with me, we'd do it all through them.
Exactly. And I think the technology I'm seeing that's being developed, airlines are trying to solve the whole journey. Hotels are looking at how they can integrate forward and back. I think you're going to see more opportunity to kind of go through the planning and dreaming and the kind of booking flights and accommodation experiences and a dinner here, all of that starting to converge so that you can have one solution.
Yeah, I can't wait for that, because it's booking holidays is my nightmare.
Totally around the corner.
Well, I wish you could tell me about it, but maybe we should just have another coffee after this.
Yes, sounds good.
Brilliant. All right, well, thank you, Tammy. That was your last question.
Thank you very much. Pleasure.
And thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll have the next EP up next week. Thank you.